www.themouthmagazine.com.
Smash the system.
Let's go down to the riot. It's summertime, and now's the time to smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
We got the numbers, roll up a number. Let's have an adventure on the escalator. I like the monkeys. Do you like the monkeys? Let's smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system. Let's go down to the demonstration. It's summertime, and now's the time to smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
You're right, I'm wrong, there's no doubt. Let's have an adventure on the escalator. Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Listen to the Velvet Underground. Listen to the Velvet Underground. Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
And Davy Jones sings. And Davy Jones. Summertime, and now's the time to smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Let's go down to the riot. It's summertime, and now's the time to smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Smash the system.
Davy Jones sings.
Smash the system, smash the system.
Luke Haynes, welcome to the Mouthcast.
Thank you.
We last podcasted together around the time of Rock and Roll Animals, which I seem to remember leading to quite a conversation about concept albums.
Mm.
So let's begin there. You've been doing that, the concept thing, for a few years now. New York in the 70s, which I'm actually looking at the 12-inch picture disc on my desk as we speak with your
good.
Beautiful painting of Lou Reed on it. Adventures in Dementia,
okay.
British Nuclear Bunkers. But your new album, Smash the System, feels looser. It does feel like there is a concept there, but it does feel looser. So what was different this time in the thinking?
Well, it wasn't when I made concept albums. They are very specifically concept albums, not in the way that, an obvious example would be like Ziggy Stardust is meant to be a concept album, but it kind of isn't really, because the story gets lost sort of halfway through. We're never really sure what the story of Ziggy is, particularly. So my concept albums are quite specific. There's a kind of A to Z, if you like. You can go the whole journey. But this album didn't start with anything like that. It was just basically some songs I've been writing, which were kind of loose. And then it occurred to me that maybe I should do something that was less conceptual, because it was kind of getting quite easy to do concept albums. So it was in a way more of a challenge to do something that wasn't a concept album. So that's what happened. And so I kind of had quite a lot of songs from this. So this time it's a case of picking what I thought were the best 12 songs.
Right, okay. Because I wondered if, because of the varied subject matter, let's say, of the last few albums, whether you were able to walk down the street and see something without thinking, right, there's a concept, that's something I can use.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It can become quite easy, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to kind of take it to the point of parody.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though I don't remind. In a way, because I think a lot of pop music is parody anyway, and I don't think we should be too precious about these things, because I'm not that precious. I mean, I've got to the point where I can pretty much write to order. I mean, I'm kind of a hack, in a way.
Okay.
I mean that in a good way. I've kind of long passed the point of kind of having to suffer for my art, or hopefully for anyone else having to suffer for my art. So I can kind of switch it on when I need to, and I can pretty much commission myself to write something. So like you say, yeah, it would be kind of quite easy to walk down the street and see, you know, whatever, you know, dwarf on a pogo stick, and you know, there's a concept album. I mean, obviously that is a concept album anyway, but you know. you'll have to say dwarf anyway. I don't know. Anyway, well, I've said it. But so apologies to any dwarfs listening, if that's not the right terminology. But edit. Yeah. But yeah, so this is kind of... I mean, there are themes to this album, I guess. There's a kind of an occult theme running through. I always kind of carry this idea about communication via the subconscious, which sounds like a kind of like highfalutin, somewhat pretentious idea, but I firmly believe that any kind of revolution that we have will be a revolution of the subconscious and won't be a conscious revolution, which is why I'm not a big supporter of Jeremy Corbyn.
Why I'm not.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think he's really kind of in on the subconscious revolution that I'm on. So yeah.
Funnily enough, I was going to ask you about Jeremy Corbyn a little bit later on, but I might as well ask you about him now, hadn't I?
All right. Yeah.
Do you sort of consider the movement behind him cultist, cult of personality, or is there a genuine uprising, do you think?
I think what it is, without wishing to be rude about any of the people that think that he's sort of the answer, because I think a lot of those people are quite decent people, and they want a decent, fair government. And ostensibly, yeah, I think he stands for those things. But unfortunately, he's an ideologue, you know. He's an ideologist, and he's not really engaged with... The serious answer is that he's not really engaged with real politics. And I think real politics sucks. I don't believe in central government anyway, so it's very easy for me to be cynical. I mean, I certainly don't need anyone to represent me, which is why I tend not to vote. And if I have voted, I've voted for the Labour Party in the past, or I've voted for Rainbow George. That's about it. He used to live next door to Peter Cook. And I voted for the guy who knew Mick Farren last time, who was just trying to make dope and fuck it in the streets kind of guy. So I voted for him because I like that more. I like that more than the Corbyn. My basic problem with Corbyn is that he's got no imagination and he's thick as mint.
Do you really think so?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think he's got no imagination. I don't think he's very bright, but I think he's going to destroy the Labour Party, which will undoubtedly create a vacuum for the far right. So I think he's not a force for good. But I think the people, I think what's happened is a lot of young people who sort of don't, you know, who to them kind of socialism and Marxism is like, seems it will be like a new concept rather than to a lot of other people who don't see it as a dead hand. And I just think he's playing the dead man's hand all the time with no intention of really winning anything. You know, he just wants to be in opposition protesting, because that's what he's done all his life, basically. So that's what I think. I don't think very highly of him.
I wonder, what was that film, Robert Redford film in the 70s? Was it The Candidate?
Yes.
There was no intention of winning, and then at the end, it was, right, now the hard work starts.
Yes.
I wonder if it's going to be like that if he gets in. But...
Well, I think it's going to be a lot of... We've got a long time of Tories.
Right.
I'm afraid.
Not the brightest of futures.
No.
Let's go back to Smash the System. There's a lot of analog synth on there, which I really love that sound. And I actually wondered, listening to this record, whether you were deliberately creating a sort of 70s soundscape. I hate that word. Or whether that just naturally happened, you know, because that's the palette at your disposal.
Yeah, it's kind of... I wasn't really going for a 70s soundscape, to use that word again, but the thing is, a lot of records that were recorded in the 70s have a natural kind of dry sound, which I quite like, which is a much more direct way of getting your your message or your sound across. So I tend not to have things swathed in reverb, which is a sort of hangover of the 80s and the 90s. So a lot of my records are pretty dry if you listen to them. That there's, you know, I try and use as little reverb or delay on stuff as possible. So it's much more kind of in your face. And that's really the only reason why I think I wasn't kind of really going for a 70s thing. And really, this record is the one that's maybe it's got the least to do with the 70s of records I've made. For some time I was thinking about this, and really, because the song Recliner's Brain Is Missing, for example, could be seen as a song about the 70s, but it's actually about what happened in the 90s, the true story of when her actual brain went missing from a laboratory in Stuttgart. And so the song is from the point of view of the brain. So much as I wrote a song called Bill's Bunker on the New York in the 70s album, which wasn't about, it was about William Burroughs, but it's from the point of view of the drugs in his body. As a sort of like, from the point of view of the smack, you know, in his veins, on whatever other drugs he was taking, which I kind of quite like that idea of just taking a point of view of some sort of organic thing that's not, maybe not human, and writing it from that point of view rather than always writing from the point of view of humans. which is why I have such a big chart presence at the moment.
Okay, are you desperate to be inhuman then? Is that what you're saying?
No, maybe I am. I don't know. I don't think so. I get. You know, I think there are many ways of telling a story or a song. You know, and my songs are kind of often, I suppose, stories. That's what they are, really. So it's just nice to kind of tell it from a different point of view. You know, there's a song on it called Ritual Magic, which is kind of about metamorphosizing into the earth, you know, and there's lines about becoming a tree and about how kind of like birds and insects fuck on our leaves and stuff like that, you know. So again, it's done from the point of view of a tree. So it's not, so like I said, it's not really it's not an album about the 70s at all. About I suppose transmorphing or something like that, if it's about anything.
Power of the Witch has got the greatest opening line I've ever heard, I think, which is, I was channeling young Mr. Grace when a voice said, "Get thee to the all-night garage."
Yeah.
Which, you know, once again, there's a great sense of humour in your material. But in the context of what you do, I think almost everyone else's music seems ridiculously po-faced.
Yeah.
Not that you've made some sort of comedy novelty album, but there's almost this feeling that the most rock and roll thing to do is almost throw things away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, not that the songs are throwaway. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does make sense. I was listening to I was writing a review, a piece for a website called Talkhouse, which I write for sometimes, on the new Pixies album. And the new Pixies album is good. Mm. It's really, but it's all really throwaway. It's sort of like the total antithesis of, say, like the Bowie album or the new Nick Cave album. And obviously they're going to, you know, they're somber and they're heavy for good reason, which I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want to comment on at all. But I think there's also I like a kind of rock and roll lightness and a rock and roll throwawayness, because I think rock and roll is meant to be exciting if it's meant to be anything. And so maybe things like Power of the Witch were kind of thinking along those terms. I mean, it was just a stream of consciousness lyric, really, you know, but about various sort of, you know, it's about kind of like seances and you know, when you do kind of Ouija boards and stuff like that, and all the stuff that goes on with that. And it's just, there's a kind of a, like I said, there is a kind of like an occult sort of theme running through the whole album, which is partly to do with the idea of tapping into the subconscious, because I think once you tap into the subconscious, you kind of start to hone in on those, that kind of level, and the kind of more occult level, what might be called an occult level of understanding or misunderstanding. So that's kind of where that came from.
Have you ever done a Ouija board?
I've done stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I used to be quite interested in all those kind of things. And I'm sort of getting kind of more interested in it, you know, the idea of kind of spiritualist churches and stuff like that. I'm getting more interested again, right, as I get older. and looking at other kind of, I suppose, systems of belief or something like that, to tapping into those kind of things. Because that side of things has always interested me, and I'm quite open to those kind of things, much more than I am to sort of rationalism, you know, in a way, just because I find rationalism deathly dull, you know. Because, you know, I think that's another symptom of our times, that why Corbyn has kind of risen to dominance, because we live in this time. Rationalism is good in a way, because obviously I don't want to live in this kind of time of flat earthers and whatnot, you know, or or anything else like that. But it's also, I think, the kind of, you know, there seems to be a kind of a big trend towards atheism a few years ago, which is sort of like still prevalent, but it doesn't seem to be kind of talked about so much. And I think a lot of the knock-on of that is Corbyn and stuff like that, was very much what I'm not interested in. I'm after the fantastic.
I wondered about this in relation to that. I wondered about this kind of idea of big statements, big spiritual statements in rock and roll. Like you get, you know, you kind of get the big sincere Athena poster moments from Coldplay. In your music, we get essentially what seems to me to amount to the following statement: rock and roll is bullshit.
Well, you say that, but I can't thoroughly believe in the redemptive power of rock and roll.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But I think rock and roll, like art, is bullshit. You know, it's all bullshit. But it's sort of stuff that kind of, it's the good bullshit that kind of occupies our time while we're here, and we might as well enjoy it, and rather than be frightened of it or something like that. I'm kind of much more for embracing these things, but seeing them for what they are. So on one hand, I see rock and roll as completely righteous and redemptive, but on the other hand, I know it's horse shit.
Jack Fuck! I was channeling young Mr. Grace when a voice said, get thee to the all-night garage. Get flowers, get toxins, get offerings, offerings for the hovering, 20 B&H, but the dead like super kings. Moody, knock once, we got a comedy glitch. Power of the witch, power of the witch, power of the witch. The power of the witch, knock twice. The beginning of all magical operations are in the determination of the imagination. I'm curing cancer with a family doctor from Munich. Michael, I draw you, and you help me. Welsh hills, pagan earth. Welsh hills, Welsh dirt. The power of the witch, power of the witch, power of the witch. Power the witch, a Joseph Goebbels, Sid and Nancy, a girl with a rare blood disease, rare but nothing fancy. Welcome to the day shift, Paul. Welcome to the day shift, but you're on the night shift, sonny. Pet doggy, power the witch, power the witch, power the witch, power of the witch. Knock three times, I'm coming in, baby. Louise, resources manager, she hides a symbol behind your mirror. You cut yourself shaving, she steals the tissue. Hubble bubble, all the sixes are in the ditch. Welsh ditch, missing a click from your clickety click. Oh, sexy. Power of the witch, power of the witch. Power of the witch, 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 power of the witch.
Do you see yourself in this grand tradition of outsiders that runs through British pop? I'm thinking particularly of Sir Henry at Rollington End, Viv Stanchel.
I don't really know about that kind of that idea. I mean, I'm, I feel more like one of those people, those kind of early 70s musicians, like, not that I'm comparing myself to, but I feel more akin to people like kind of Kevin Ayers and Robert Wyatt, right, who are just sort of doing their thing, really. I'm really just kind of doing my thing in the corner because I know what I'm doing, yeah, and I'm kind of comfortable in my skin and I've got nothing to prove, but I've just got a sort of... I've got a kind of restless nature, I guess, that kind of drives me on to write pop songs. And they are pop songs, they're just unpopular, you know, amongst the general public. But that's okay, because that doesn't really matter.
So how does that work in relation to actually putting records out, having to make it work, if you see what I mean?
Mm.
I guess from the art angle is quite a freeing thing, but the commerce angle, surely that's, you know, a bit of a constraint.
Weirdly, I met up with my friend Momus the other night, and I hadn't seen him for a while, and we went out for a drink, and we kind of came to the conclusion that failure is the new success, basically. Okay. That we've had these kind of long careers, but basically have probably thrived on commercial failure, which has probably, I think, given us much longer careers than either of us would have had. Anyway, he's got a theory that if you've... he's very kind of analytical, and he's done some sort of statistics, that if you've had... I think it's if you've had one top 20 album, and I haven't actually had a top 20 album. I've had a few close shaves. I've had one top 20 album. You're likely to die at the age of 56. And this is the... He's 56 now. He's never had a top 20 album. So we're kind of, you know, we're doing all right, really. Yeah. So failure is success, you know, for us.
All right. Well, you're pretty vocal. I think I saw a photo of you and Momus, actually, that you put on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah.
You're pretty vocal on there. You often have plenty to say. In fact, you're one of the first Twitter users that I look for as a kind of, I'm sure you'll find this description loathsome, but a kind of alternative culture commentator, if you like. I'm sure you hate
that.
Yeah,
but that's pretty loathsome, yeah.
Yeah. Like in the last week, for instance, you've commented on all sorts of stuff, but let's pick out two from different ends of the spectrum, if you like. Obviously, yeah. David Bowie and the Mercury Prize, and Shaking Stevens and his concept album about his family working down Cornish tin mines.
Cornish tin mines, yeah. I actually want to hear that, yeah.
I interviewed him about a month ago about it. He's a really fascinating character.
Black Box Recorders drummer used to be in Shaky's band as well, so there's a connection.
Really?
You know, we're all, you know, we're all so many steps from Shaky. You know?
He's the new Kevin Bacon.
He is, yeah.
But really, I wanted to talk to you about Bowie, the death of Bowie, and how interesting it was. For a lot of reasons, I kind of understood the Lady Di syndrome for the first time, really, how easy it is to get caught up in that way of thinking. But it also felt absolutely on merit that he deserved that kind of notice, if you like.
Yes, God, he was a lightning rod for so many British lives, I suppose. And it was a kind of, it seems like a very British thing. It's almost one of those few things that almost all of us of a certain age and younger could kind of agree on, that we, it's very hard not to love David Bowie. And it seemed like one of those things, but again, genuinely on merit. And I think that's why there was a sort of outrage with a few sort of dickheads like Giles Corran and some other dickheads who were sort of like, oh, well, I don't know what this is all, you know, these public school nitwits banging on about how it didn't mean anything, you know, who had no understanding of pop music at all. So I think it was one of those things, because he was a huge part of my musical kind of formative years, and it was sort of I was kind of surprised at how I felt when he died, and I didn't really, not being an insider, I didn't really know of all the rumours and stuff like that he was ill at all, so I was completely taken aback by it. I suppose it was maybe the first time I'd really understood the Diana thing, or public, not public mourning, but national mood, the idea of national mood, you know. I've always been a big believer in national mood anyway, but I've never been caught up in it before.
Yeah, it was really, so I don't think any other, I mean, Prince died a few months later.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit about Prince, though. I don't think he made any good records. So I didn't care about that at all. Yeah, I wasn't touched at all by Prince's music. Yeah.
that's quite interesting to me, because I in some way believe that you and Prince are on a level in the fact that you're obsessed with what you do, and very, very, the work is very, very close to the person, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. You know, his stuff was very sincere, but as an artist, he just never meant anything to me. I think I'm way funkier than Prince, anyway. So, you
okay.
know.
Yeah. Your album Raving, volumes 1 to 75. 75 one-off CDs, a different performance of a new album on each CD.
Yeah.
I really, really like that idea, but here's the thing. Mm. It almost played like a deliberate fuck you to those who like to collect everything.
Mm.
Was there an element of that in the thinking?
No.
Okay.
Never is. No.
Okay.
No, it's all done with utter sincerity. No. And it's if you kind of buy into those things. I did an Outsider Music one before, of volumes 1 to 50, which is the same idea. Basically, what happens is I write a set of songs that becomes one of those albums, and it's got to be something I can perform live X amount of time. So sometimes it's not going to have the sophistication of stuff that I would do if you want to call it like one of my proper albums. So there, it's specifically written as a kind of art piece to be performed, and to be performed lots of times, and also so that things can happen while I'm doing it. So each performance is different, so it doesn't bore me. Because it's actually quite, believe it or not, it's quite hard work recording the same set of songs 75 times.
Yeah.
So no, there's absolutely no element of fuck you to it at all. It's just what it is. You either buy into the idea or you don't buy into the idea. And it's not going to be for everyone, because, you know, some of the stuff's going to be pretty weird on it, and some of it might even seem a bit throwaway. But there's going to be some genuinely good songs on it, and it should. I think both of those albums both played pretty well as albums on their own merit, but they're kind of, you'd have to think of it more as a kind of very kind of unhinged sort of Syd Barrett thing, or like a Skip Spence kind of thing. That's how I was kind of viewing it.
Yeah.
Of kind of, well, what would those guys have done if they only had the kind of concentration to just play this set of songs they'd scraped together. So some of it was kind of like scraps of songs, you know, some of it was half an idea for a song, but it was all meant to be as it was, you know, so it was all very deliberate.
And you also wrote a cookbook.
Yeah.
I have to, obviously, you know, so that we can end on a reasonably topical note, the Great British Bake Off, which I'm sure you have got no interest in whatsoever.
None at all.
Has moved to Channel 4.
It has indeed, yes. Yeah. You see, I think this has become the kind of totem of Brexit, because obviously Bake Off is like the most Brexit programme ever made. It's just like, you know, the stupid little Englanders being judged by their public school betters at making cakes. And the guy who's kind of gone off, the kind of Judas, that guy in leather trousers, whatever his name is, he's going to become like the kind of hate figure for all the Brexit believers, you know, because they need a hate.
Paul Hollywood.
Yeah, Paul Hollywood, that's the guy, yeah. He's going to be seen as the hate figure. Basically, the leavers haven't been able to kind of admit that it was a terrible decision, and they need a hate figure. So that's Paul Hollywood, you know. Yeah. And this is what's going to happen. He's going to be being kind of crucified or something in Luton or somewhere like that.
On two French sticks nailed together.
Yeah, exactly. Or burned on a pile of Eccles cakes or something like that. I don't know. But,
Because, your cookbook, I thought it was a great idea, and I wanted to see you on TV doing it. I wanted the Luke Haynes cookery show.
Yeah. That would be good.
It would be good.
If Channel 4 want me to take over Bake Off, I'm quite happy, you know. And my fee is quite reasonable, you know. I'm prepared to negotiate.
Well, that book and your two memoirs, which we spoke about briefly last time we podcasted, to sign off, Luke, have you any plans for further books?
No, not really. I'm managing to kind of exercise my writing at the moment. I've got a column in Record Collector, which allows me kind of like 1,000 words of, you know, whatever I'm thinking about in terms of old rock and roll. I write bits and bobs for things. I feel my kind of writing needs are catered for, but who knows, at some point in the next few years, maybe I will write something again, but I haven't really at the moment, I kind of haven't got the time to do it. And brutally honest, I haven't actually got an idea. So so I need to, have the time and an idea. And, you know, and then things, you know, so if things align, then maybe there'd be another book.
Your mother or a dancer. I'm not Vince Taylor or Mick Fabler. I'm just a bunny, a black bunny, black leather bunny. Station, waiting for the rock and roll train. Shaq rides a rock and roll bike in the rock and roll rain. Yeah, I'm just looking for Vince Taylor in Geneva with a leather chain. Took a trip on a rock and roll blue on the rock and roll airways.
I'm not a leather girl shaking all over. I'm not a playboy. Oh, that's not murder. I'm just a bunny, a black bunny, a black bunny, a black bunny.
This murder on the Abbey Haley. Out rock and roll night, smoking a Pall Mall cigarette or a fat 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 fat. Yeah, I'm just looking for Vince Taylor, waiting for the rock and roll train. Shaq rides a rock and roll bike in the rock and roll rain. Yeah,
I'm not Bill Haley. I'm not a farmer, a Vince Taylor. I'm not Vince Taylor, a Vince Taylor. I'm not Vince Taylor, a black bunny.
Taylor. www.themouthmagazine.com.